Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Wandering Road Podcast. I'm your host, Chris, and joining me for today's show as a guest is the familiar voice of Mr. JJ Johnson, the host of the Southern Demonology Pod. And today is going to be a little different because JJ has some stories to share with us from when he grew up in a log cabin. So some of you might recognize JJ from previous episodes. He's done quite a few with us, featured on quite a few. And the first episode that we did with JJ, we kind of interviewed him about his paranormal experiences, but we really didn't get to do a deep dive on the ghost that he lived with for a very long time. Patrick, what I dubbed the unfriendly ghost. Very bad joke.
I love it.
Yeah. So today we're going to be talking about Patrick the Unfriendly Ghost and whatever creepy things you may have for us tonight, JJ, that we didn't cover last time back in, what was it? October, I think it was.
Gosh, that doesn't even seem right. It seems like I've known you for years at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, it really does. But it's weird how all this stuff works. You just send someone a message like, hey, you want to be on the podcast? And then it's like a zillion episodes later, I've been on your show. You've been on my show. I've been on The Rundown. Met some of your other podcasting friends like Vic and Father Birdsong. So it's been a nice experience to.
And now we're fighting for democracy together.
In Helldivers. If you're not a Helldiver, go buy that game and go fight for democracy. Super Earth demands it.
Well, very sorry for the time that you will dump into that game and never get back, but it is worth it.
It is totally worth it.
I think I'm at 72 hours in that game. It's ridiculous.
Dude, I only clocked in 24. What the hell?
I'm not a particularly addictive personality, but dear Lord in heaven, just something about that game just scratches some primal part of my brain that it will not let go. It's ridiculous.
It makes you forget about all the ghosts and all that crap.
No, that would be accurate.
But Mr. JJ, let's start from the beginning. From our previous conversations, you've made mention multiple times that you used to live in a log cabin, a 200-year-old log cabin.
Yeah, so I grew up in Sladen, Tennessee, which has a population of 113 people. It is the smallest town in the entire state, which is roughly an hour and a half northwest of Nashville and about 30 minutes equidistant from both Dixon and Clarksville. And Clarksville is right next to Fort Campbell Military Base. So it's right near the edge of the Kentucky-Tennessee border. So tiny little place. And where I live has always freaked out my friends. It's kind of ridiculous. For example, I had a birthday party for my son, and I invited down a couple of my coworkers who lived in Nashville or around Nashville. And when they got to where we lived, well, I think because we had it at my mom's house, they swore they would never come back. They're like, this is the freakiest place I have ever been. It's small. The people look at us weird. No, we are getting the frick out. And I'm like, well, you're not the first person who have told me this. So that's perfectly fine.
So what's so unsettling about where you grew up?
A few things. So first, the log cabin that I lived in, until I was in eighth grade, and then my mom had actually purchased a double-wide trailer and put it into the back of it So, yes, I am true redneck royalty in that regard. It actually had been in a different location. And then they had my ancestors had moved it from way back in the woods to closer to the road is now, log by log. And it has existed, you know, the logs have existed for 200 years in some various conflagration. And strangely enough, my great aunt and uncle, who lived just one cow pasture over from us, they had a house that was exactly the same. So they might as well have been twins. I don't know how old that house is, but they look comparable in age.
So if you take into consideration that you were born, what, in the 1970s, right?
Yep.
So 200 years old. So you're talking about something that was probably built in the 1770s.
More than likely, yes.
So that's insane. And it makes me wonder how things and energy just get attached to that.
And that's true. It's not just for the house, but it's for the land. The land itself has so many attachments to it that every family has an entire host of ghost stories that they tell. And some of it can be attributed to the fact that there are Native American burial mounds all over the woods for this entire region. And they are renowned for having a lot of creepiness associated with them. For example, we have a hill that it's about a 6-mile hike in back behind our house in Tennessee, and it's called Tarzan Hill. And that's because its slope is at, I don't know, like what, a 50 degree angle. It's nigh on impossible to walk up, and it goes up a good 50 feet in the air. It is the most like Native American burial mound looking thing that you could ever see in your life. Across the street is an area of the woods that they call the Colons. And it's because it is pitted with so many holes that more than a few people who have gone back there have stuck their leg in them and broken it. And every like parcel of land has its own legends associated with it. It is literally a patchwork of nightmares.
Do you know of any tribes that lived there? Like, was there conflicts with the colonists or anything?
That's just the historian in me. Yeah, I mean, it would be really interesting to find that out. Sladen itself was mainly known. I mean, it was started in 1880. As part of a railroad town. There was a railroad that ran straight through. And in fact, you can like literally where our front yard is, that's where the tracks used to be. And you, as a kid, we used to go through and find railroad rock, the crystallized limestone that you could find that's really shiny and pretty. We would find that and collect it all the time. So there's a lot of remnants, even though the old railroad station was tore down when I was a kid, there are still tons of remnants of all of this.
Oh, wow. That's super interesting. That would be interesting to see. I'm a sucker for all that historical stuff.
Well, in fact, the town in which we actually get our postal code name from is called Cumberland Furnace. And the reason it got its name is because there are gigantic furnaces in several locations where they used to manufacture cannonballs.
Cannonballs?
Yeah, for the Civil War.
Oh, crap. Wow, lots of history down there. Lots of Civil War history, too. I've been meaning to get down to Tennessee. I'm a Civil War junkie, so I like to go to battlefields and historical sites. So it'll be on my list of things to do. So back to the house. Was it always in Tennessee, or
Yes, it was always in Tennessee.
Always in Tennessee. So your thinking is that it's not necessarily the house, the log cabin that was haunted, more so just where they happened to post up the log cabin to live in.
Well, in our particular case, Patrick was always in the attic of the old house, what we call it.
If as far back as you can remember, tell us about your first introduction to Patrick.
We had always heard stories about Patrick from other family members, and it's normally said in a jesting kind of way. But then you would occasionally notice that people would be looking at each other with a knowing look, or a look that would, you know, that I would later interpret as, let's not scare the kid. Like, for example, I think one of the first stories that I had ever heard was, so in that attic, that actually used to be a bedroom, and that's where my great uncle Tutu happened to live. Now, even though Tutu was a great uncle, he was only a handful of years older than my eldest uncle happened to be. So he was still kind of very much in the same generation as the rest of my aunts and uncles. So he would stay up there, but he would always report strange sounds or having things moved around. And when the kids would walk upstairs, they would see that A, it was cold, but B, there would be a body print lying on the bed when there is no one there. No one had been there. And for me, my first kind of encounter with Patrick was I was sitting on the couch in the living room watching the TV. And even though all the doors were closed, there was no windows open, that attic door began to slowly creak open. And then it slowly creaked back. And it kept doing this a good 5 times. And I finally called out, is anyone there? And then it slammed shut. And I went, nope, no one's there. And I walked outside because I was having nothing to do with that. I love ghost stories, but I think that was the first time I ever encountered something that I could not explain. And I did not enjoy that whatsoever.
Now I'm going to channel my inner Dean since he's not here. You sure the imprint on the bed wasn't just your uncle's imprint, you know, left on the mattress?
No, don't get me wrong. They were not my family is not a rich family, as evident by the double wide that we were talking about. However, they were not so poor as to have a mattress that, you know, could leave a body print for hours, if not days. That does not happen.
I had to pay homage to him because I knew that's something he would ask.
It's a good clarifying question. And of course, this happened long before I was born, so I really can't, you know, vouch for the validity of that. But if my family said it and they were not joking or recanted at a later date, then I am very, very prone to believe it.
Right. And I think you have just reason because of that whole door thing and then it just slams. Which reminds me of something that it always slips my mind to share about what I experienced, this in particular, because it was kind of funny and it wasn't really scary. So it was me, my sister, and my cousin Sean. So we're hanging out in my room. It's in the middle of the summer break. Sometime in July, we got the air conditioner on, whatever, we're hanging out. And this is in the haunted house I've talked about that I lived in. So we had the door shut. It wasn't creaked open or nothing. And then it just slowly started opening. And then my cousin, being a smartass, he's about 4 years older than me, so he would have been 20 at the time. he sticks his hand out and he says, "The power of Christ compels you. The power of Christ compels you." And that fucking door just went all the way back and shut itself.
Oh my gosh.
Looking back, then probably something we shouldn't have done, but that's, I was
your kids, what can you do?
I know. All right, so you have that experience with Patrick with the door. So was that like your first introduction, like your first actual interaction?
Oh, it absolutely was.
So after that, like what else did you encounter with Patrick?
Well, Patrick proceeded to scare the shit out of me in my dreams.
Oh, gosh.
So in the living room, let me describe the layout of the house. There was a large living room, and then the attic was a door off in the upper right hand corner that would go up to the attic. The next room was an adjoining room that joined both the living room and the kitchen. But it was designated as a bedroom. And then there was a kitchen off to the left of that room. And then you would go into the back, and it was kind of a long washer area that also had a bathroom over on the left-hand side. So that was it. That was the entirety of the house. And there were three people that were living there: myself, my mom, and my grandmother. So my grandmother had that one dedicated bedroom, even though it wasn't, because there was no doors that led to it. And then in the living room, there were two different beds, one up against each side of the wall. And my mom was in the one that was next to the front door, and then I was on the one next to the other bedroom. And hanging above the bed was a picture of my great-grandfather. And that picture always freaked me out. It's, you know, of course, it's black and white. He passed away when my grandmother was 16, and he was very young himself. And there's actually a ghost story associated with his death as well. But I went to bed one night, and I dreamed that the attic door flung open, and this thing, overwhelming blackness, came rushing out and was at the foot of my bed, because my bed was directly across from the attic door. And it said, "You will die on November 2nd. And I remember looking up at that picture of my great-grandfather, and its eyes were blazing, just with an unknown force, almost pinned me to the bed. I woke up screaming. And that dream has stayed with me my entire life, because every time November 2nd rolls around, I'm like, was it true? Is this the day I'm going to die? Is it this year? And the thing is, you never know until it's the last day. But that freaked me the ever-living frick out, and it has stayed with me until this day.
Dude, that would scare the crap out of me. I can't say that I've had as many nightmares as you have. So for the listeners, JJ has mentioned in previous episodes that he does have frequent nightmares.
Oh, 90 to 95% of my dreams are nothing but nightmares. I have died numerous times in my dreams. And it's actually a family trait. My mom is the exact same way. Almost every one of her dreams is a nightmare. Although mine tend to be very paranormal, supernatural related. They involve monsters and zombies and ghosts and, you know, everything else in between. My mom dreams of much more mundane scenarios still horrifying, but like people breaking into the house or trying to kill her family and stuff like that.
I have to ask before I ask about Patrick again. Were any of those dreams, well, for your mom or any of your other family members that have them, were they precognition? Like, had those things come to pass? Or was it kind of one of those cases where it's just really messed up dreams?
So those are just really messed up dreams. And I pray to God that's true, because as of late, I've been dreaming about demons, and that's never a fun particular topic. However,
I'd like to get into that later if you're okay with sharing.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah. However, when I was a kid, there was I would have a separate type of dream that always came true. So normally when I dream, they are in vivid color. Everything is in very realistic terms. And actually, most of the tend to take place in either a school, a hotel, or a labyrinthine structure. I don't know why, always. However, when I was a kid, I would have these very simplistic and weird dreams that were always in black and white. And those were the dreams that always came true. And they never depicted anything serious, except for maybe kind of one. In these dreams, I was actually my idealized self. And what that is a boy version of what I looked like when I was born. When I was born, I had blonde hair. I still have vivid blue eyes, but I had blonde hair, was really skinny. And when I was a kid, I actually had, when I grew up out of my baby phase, I had black hair and I was chubby. So I always pictured myself as this thin blonde-haired boy. And in these black and white dreams, like in this one in particular, I was near a potted plant, a potted cactus, and I fell into it and got hurt. And that happened. I was at my great aunt's house. She had this giant, it looked like a rim to an old tire, but it was hollowed out in the middle, and she held, and it had a big cactus plant in it. And I was running around and I tripped and fell into it. And then my family was plucking needles out of my backside for a good hour or two. But when this happened, I knew it was going to happen. And I remembered the dream. It was the worst case of deja vu I have ever had. And I would have these maybe once every half year, once every year, but I would know it after the fact it happened, because that sense of deja vu came roaring back in my head. But ever since I have kind of grown up, I haven't had those anymore. They were very particular, and they always had not just being in black and white, but they had a very distinct feel to them, which has always puzzled me.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because I've had a few of those dreams where the one I like to give an example of is, let's say, so let me back up a little bit. So I would have these dreams, and then I would be put in a situation where I'm walking down the street or something of that sort, and then you'd get that feeling in your head. It's a weird feeling. You can't explain it, but you just know it's deja vu.
Yep.
That it's like, I've been here before. This seems familiar. And then I remember a dream. And in one of those particular dreams that I had, I dreamt I was still at school, and I was in grad school, and I had to go downtown. And while I was walking downtown, I was attacked by a group of people. So probably a year later, I'm walking downtown, and then I see a group of people. And then that deja vu came to me. And then I had the feeling to just cross the street, because I remember that dream. And I was like, okay, this happened in my dream. It's coming back. So in order for me to avoid that situation, I do the opposite of what I did in that dream. And that's happened to me on multiple occasions.
Really?
Yes.
That is fascinating.
Dude, a really creepy one. I had family visiting and I had a very, very vivid dream that we were all in my car, my SUV. My wife was driving and we got into a wreck. And my wife and my mom ended up passing away. So one day when we were getting to go somewhere, I got that feeling and I was like, no, I'm driving. And some people would be like, oh, you're just being paranoid, yada, yada, yada. I got the feeling.
No, I'm glad that you took over driving.
And I was like, I'm driving today. I'm driving there and I'm driving back.
Yeah, because why risk it at that point?
Yeah.
I mean, that's fascinating because I haven't had them in a good, 30 plus years. But B, the fact that they're serving as warnings to you is, mine would always be just recollections after the fact of, oh my God, this happened. I should have known. And I wanted to kick myself for still doing it, even though I had that flash. And the fact that you had the good sense to actually pay attention to that is amazing right there.
Dude, I've had multiple dreams in which I was in a situation that I wanted to be in. And then I don't realize it at the moment, but I would end up in that situation. So, for example, whether it be a new job, whether it be podcasting or something of that sort, I will get that deja vu feeling. And it's like, wow, was this like a premonition of what I was going to do? And it's really interesting and creepy to me because one of my cousins, he has predictive dreams and it's just really, really scary. I don't know if he has them anymore, but when we were younger, you know, all the cousins and family and friends, they're all close to each other and everybody talking. You know, now I'm in my 30s. I probably haven't talked to the guy in 15, 16 years. So mm-hmm. I'm not sure if he still has it. But at the time, like, very, very, like, this dude had predictive dreams and they would all come to fruition, which was insane.
Wow, it's almost like you have the ghost of Marcus Aurelius whispering to you.
Marcus Aurelius.
So I was just thinking about how, you know, Robert E. Lee would carry around the, you know, meditations. The philosophy. Yeah.
Meditation.
Where he was talking about, practice every eventuality in your head. So when you, you know, it actually comes to pass, then you are prepared for it. But yeah, that's taking that to an entirely new level.
Dude, I'm a PM, so that's how I think in general. So I have to think of every possible negative outcome.
Man, that reminds me of all the TikTok videos I've sent you. I'm a product manager.
I'm a project manager. I don't know what this means. But I'm going to blame the developer. Yep, that's kind of how it goes. So back to that dream that you had of hopefully not a premonition of your demise, knock on wood. But
that would be nice.
You think it was Patrick doing that? Like, what
I do. I mean, Patrick is known for living in the attic, and this thing came straight from the attic. I knew in my heart of hearts that if there was anything responsible for this and it was a true dream, it had to be Patrick. And the thing is that we think Patrick has been responsible for warning our family of really bad accidents. And I don't know if this is in that same vein or if it was just a random dream. Still don't know to this day.
So what else did you guys experience with Patrick? It doesn't even have to be a direct experience of your own. It could be something from your grandmother or your mother.
So for my grandmother, this is a case of Patrick warning us. And this is why sometimes Patrick has a very playful side, and sometimes he plays a beneficial role for the family. My Uncle Ernest, who sadly passed away like 2.5 years ago at this point, he was like a father to me. Well, when he was a young man, he was involved in a horrific car accident, and they didn't know if he was going to live or die. While that was happening at home, my grandmother was there, and so was my mom. And the front door opened up, and there was Ernest. And my grandmother looked at him and said, "Ernest, why are you here? You're supposed to be out." And then he vanished. And then the phone rang. And it was the police telling her she needed to go to the hospital because he'd been in a very bad car wreck.
Wow. So he just, were you around at the time?
No. I wasn't born yet at all. This was back when my Uncle Ernest was 20, like in his early 20s at that point. So I wasn't even a distant glimmer in the eye of my mom yet.
And this was still at the cabin?
It was. Yep.
Okay.
But yeah, he has warned us of several types of events like that. Uncle Booty was in another bad car accident, so bad that he essentially broke every bone in his face and had to have complete facial reconstruction. That's why if you compare, I mean, it looks completely normal. You would never know this, but if you compare photos of him as he was a very young man to what he was a slightly older, they look very different from each other, even though it's the exact same person. But my grandmother had the same kind of warning from that as well. He would see him and then gone.
That's terrifying and fascinating all at the same time.
Our family has never known how to treat Patrick. On one hand, he seems to be a beneficial spirit. On the other hand, he loves scaring the ever-living shit out of people. So I don't know if it could be mistaken as mischievous, if it could be multiple entities that were responsible for this. I don't know. But I will say that that old house, it has been falling apart over the years. And actually, strangely enough, it wasn't the wood that made up the walls. It was the flooring, because it was cheap construction material. And it began to rot out. And eventually, my mom actually had it tore down a year and a half ago now. And I've always wondered what happened to Patrick as a result of that. Because that house is gone.
Right. Yeah. I was just about to ask you that question. Like, is Patrick still around? So where your mom lives now, is she still?
Still in the double wide trailer.
Still in double that wide.
Was not even, 10 foot from where the old house used to be. So it could be that it's back in the land. Who knows?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Like, maybe Patrick migrated with her. So I have to ask. So you had that one incident with the door. You had the incident with the dream. What else did Patrick do to scare the ever-living shit out of you? Or was he ever helpful to you directly?
He was never helpful to me. And that was actually the only... There were like other minor instances of doors opening, whether it be the front door, the attic door, the back door. I would have those things happen a great bit. And I grew so used to them that I just brushed them off. I'm like, oh, it's just Patrick again. I don't really care. and I would go about my day. But I will say that when I was in college, I had a couple of friends also come to Tennessee, and we had another guy that was in our group that lived in Nashville. So they went and stayed with him, but then they all came out to where my mom is, and they stayed a night or two there. And they had heard all of the stories that I have told about the old house, and they just had to see it. In fact, they wanted to have like a ghost watch party in the house.
Oh, geez.
And so we all went over there, and they had brought a bottle of cheap alcohol, and we sat around drinking, and nothing happened. And they were grossly disappointed by that fact, which, you know, you can't command something to happen. But yeah, that was kind of the last hurrah that I ever heard from Patrick after that point, because we moved out of the house when I was in eighth grade, and we had only kept it for storage.
Now here comes my analytical side. What do you think Patrick was? I wonder how far back Patrick goes, because I'm thinking in my mind, was Patrick maybe an asshole family member, ancestor that just didn't like people and thought it was funny to sometimes be helpful, like, hey, you caught me in a good mood, I'll help you out. But for the most part, it's like, why are you here? Just get out of my log cabin type of thing.
So I definitely think that it was a ghost of some type. I don't think it was another type of entity. And that would actually kind of track, given our family history. In our family, if we, and I still do this to this day, if I like you, then I'm going to pick on you. If I don't like you, then I'm just going to be polite, and I'll never joke around with you or anything else. And that's the way all of our family is. In fact, even with my own son, I'll sit there and, you know, call him names and everything else, and he'll do the same thing to me. And it's a really good kind of back and forth. So it would be, there could be the ghostly equivalent of that. But our family has always had a history with the paranormal, which is one of the reasons why I grew up so addicted to ghost stories. You know, in addition to planting my own grave marker when I was 6 years old, it's just something that's always ran in my blood, and I have never been able to get it out. Thank goodness. It's a part of me.
Yeah, I completely understand that. Like, once it's ingrained in you, it's something that you can't get rid of. No matter how much people call you crazy or try to rationalize it and debunk it, it'll always be a part of you. Like I always say, like, you know, what I went through, what you went through, if there's someone that could come around and debunk that a Patrick didn't exist and debunk that whatever entity was in the old home I lived in didn't exist, by all means, it'll probably give us a better peace of mind that maybe it was just some sort of phenomenon that can be explained by science. But you mentioned that, you know, the paranormal stuff runs in your family and the whole ghost story type of stuff. Like, what was like some stories that were shared with you aside from the whole Patrick type of stuff? Or was Patrick always the mainstay?
Oh, no, he was only a character in the tapestry, I guess you could say.
Now, you can't mention tapestry and not go further into it.
Oh, I will. Going back to the rich tapestry.
Yes.
So let's start off with my great grandfather's death. He was a hemophiliac, and his hair turned stark white when he was 16 years old. He had a tooth pulled. It would not stop bleeding. He was taken to the hospital. And that night, my entire family, it was the middle of summer, They were sitting outside on the porch, and a lantern began to come up the pathway to the front house. And as it got closer, they saw that there was nobody holding it. It sat itself down on the porch, and a booming voice echoed out, "Your father has died this night." And it picked itself up, and it floated back away.
What?
It was just an announcement. And sure enough, the police came out to the house the next day and informed my great-grandmother and family that their father had passed away in the hospital.
How do you explain that? You can't.
I don't. I have no explanations for that whatsoever.
Wow.
So that one has always blown my mind. One of the other ones, and this is one of my favorite stories of all time, and it involved my grandmother. My grandmother had a week of education. She went to school for 1 week in kindergarten, and they couldn't afford to send any of the kids. So that was it. She could not, she later in life learned how to write her name. And she would slowly and carefully scrawl it out whenever she had to sign a check, because that's the only time she ever wrote it, or she had to sign a document. In fact, when she had to get a license, the kids would read everything to her, and then she would have to memorize all of the answers in order to then pass the test that was given to them. She was one of the smartest women I had ever met, but yet she just didn't have the benefit of an education.
Same thing with my grandmother.
Yeah. And so, but she was married to an evil, evil man, my grandfather. And a whole lot of stuff happened. And in the 1960s, right around there, she divorced him, which was unheard of, especially in the Deep South. But she could not be around him anymore for the safety of herself and for the safety of her children. In fact, I was driving down a dirt road going to my uncle's house, and I looked over, and my grandmother had her fingers clenched. And I go, "What's wrong, Ma?" And she goes, "I hate this road." And I looked, and I'm like, "Why?" She goes, "Well, if you ever have ridden down this road with a shotgun pointed at your head, it would tend to leave some really bad memories." I didn't ask any more. I went, "Okay, yeah, I can absolutely see that." But anyway, she raised five kids all by herself. And one day, she took her two mules out to the tobacco field to plant, well, to plow the earth. And this field that she goes to, it's still right next to where my mom's house is. And there was essentially two different entry points to it. There was a larger one that at the lower left-hand corner, and then one that leads way off into the deep woods that's at the upper right-hand corner. But otherwise, this field is completely boxed in by trees. It was just cleared for that purpose. So she was out in there fighting with the mules, and she said that she used to cuss like a Russian sailor. Well, she began to hear chains coming up from the deep forest path, and they kept getting closer and closer until they felt like it sounded like they were right on top of her, but she couldn't see anything. So she stopped what she was doing. She was frantically looking around. until the chains wrapped around her neck. Still couldn't see anything. Her hands went to her neck. She couldn't, there was nothing there to pull apart, but yet she was being choked, and she fell to her knees, trying to get a breath. And the only thing that she could do is recite the Lord's Prayer. And the further she got into it, the tighter the chains got, until she finally gasped out the last words. And then the chains unwrapped around her throat and marched back down to the deep woods, to the holler. And she says that's the reason why she no longer curses.
That would be one really good reason to not curse anymore. Dude, the entire time you're relaying this. So, like, I don't know if you have this ability to. I know some of my friends don't. But as you were recanting that story, it's like playing like a movie in my head.
Oh, yeah. And
I had nothing but goosebumps. Me trying to figure out what that could have been.
She always claimed that it was the devil that had come to visit her. And she swore that until her dying day, that it was the devil that had paid her a visit.
See, that's really interesting, because I don't know if you listened to my episode 50 with Trev, my buddy Trev from Ireland. He recounts a tale where he lives in the rural parts of Ireland. And as a kid, he was playing outside. He's about 8 or 9 years old. And he goes to get something, like one of his toy guns or something, from a ditch. And he goes there. And there's this haggard-looking guy in a crisp blue suit. But Trev, like, says his eyes will never leave him. And he just stood there. And he's like, so Trev is, I think he was born, like, in the early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the early 80s, according to him, it was still pretty rural where he lives, that it would be impossible for someone to be drunk and just wander onto their property. That's how far away they were.
Right.
And he had no explanation. He said he was just struck with fear. So as you were telling that story about your grandmother, correct?
Yes.
That is one thing that I think of.
And strangely enough, that is not the only story of a female member of my family being strangled, strangely enough. I think this is my great-grandmother or great-great-grandmother. Certainly, I never would have known her. But the story goes...
So we're talking about the 1800s now at this point.
It has to be, yeah. And the story goes is that her son had taken over as the caretaker of a church's cemetery. And they let him use the house that was on the premises for him to live in. And he was very proud of his job, and he invited his mom to come out and spend some time there. And so she did. But during that night, she woke up with a pair of invisible hands grasping her throat and throttling her. And she did the same thing. She began to recant the Lord's Prayer. And the tighter they squeezed, the more she forgot, until she was able to gasp out those last words. And then they disappeared. But she never, so they say, set foot in that house again.
Now, this is just me speculating. JJ, have you ever looked into your family history?
Some, but I haven't done like a full genealogical workup or anything.
Because it makes me just wonder a little bit. Because the women on my side of the family, well, on my mom's side, and some of my dad's side, are very, very sensitive to this type of stuff, where they'll see things, they'll experience things, and it sounds like this is very much the case for you as well. And I always wonder, like, why that is. Did someone in the past, like, engage in some sort of activity that they shouldn't have, you know? And I'm not accusing your family of being part of, like, the Salem witches or something, but...
No, I've always wondered that myself. In fact, I've always found it very odd that the members of my family, especially my mom and I, are blessed or cursed with constant nightmares. And, you know, is it a trick of genetics? Is it a curse that has fallen upon us? I have no idea. But it's something that I would be insanely curious to find out, to put it lightly.
Yeah, that's something that would be really interesting to get into because, you know, let me use tarot cards as an example. Some people call them a divination tool. Some people call them a gateway. I know I definitely say they're akin to Ouija boards. There's some people that you see online and just pick it up as a fad. You yourself had bought a deck, you told me. At one
point, oh, yeah.
In your past, did a reading, didn't know what the hell you were doing. And it, one thing led to another, and that's another nightmare.
I had to flee from a girl's house as a result. Yes, that would be a very bad memory. Don't like that one.
By the way, listeners, JJ loves the Lion King, so.
Oh, don't even go there.
It's directly related to the tarot stuff. But, so, you know, I view these tools, like I view tarot cards the same way I view Ouija boards. They are portals to the other side.
Then yeah, it's a door.
Yep, it is a door. And then you have people that just buy them, do the readings, do the booklets, whatever. It is what it is. They don't technically really know what they're doing. And then you have someone like my cousin. Dude, if you were to get a reading from her, holy shit. She will tell you things about yourself that you never told to anyone. And that's where I wonder, like, that's where my mind goes thinking about the past. Like, who in the past, specifically a woman in the past, an ancestor, I mean, it doesn't have to be, but if you look at the chain of events, it's mainly the women that are affected. Like, who did what? Who was engaged in what? Who was this powerful person that was probably a healer or some sort of witch or did some sort of thing? Because like you said yourself in our multiple private conversations, crossroad magic is a real fucking thing.
Oh, yeah.
Some people that can do it. There's some people that can't.
Well, let me ask you this. Have you ever heard of Bible whispers?
Bible whispers?
Yes.
No, sir. Please enlighten us.
They are individuals who have been granted the power to recite a particular verse from the Bible and heal people.
Really?
And it manifests differently for different families. There were some people in which it followed a very rigid structure that it had to be passed from mother to son. Others, it didn't matter, but they would somehow know how to do it instinctively. For example, my aunt, she broke out in hives one day, and they were, you know, itching her terribly. They wouldn't go away. And my grandmother took her to a wise woman, and she was a Bible whisperer, and she whispered. And the next day, my aunt was covered in twice the number of boils than she was the previous day. My grandmother took her to another wise woman who said, oh, God, you went to her? nah, she don't know what she's doing. And she recited another verse quietly so you could not hear it, almost just a whisper. And the next day, my aunt was completely fine.
Wow.
No boils, no hives, no nothing. And this is kind of like my mom has known three separate people that had this power, one in which it was passed from mother to son. And unfortunately, that son never had any other kids, so it died with him. But there was another girl, and actually, she went to the same school that my mom did, and she was a drunk and a half, and yet she could come out and whisper something and make whatever ailment it was just go away.
Now, have you seen it for yourself? Or
I have not.
No.
In fact, the weird thing is that I didn't even know about this. Last year, I had a sty that popped up on my left eye. Now, I'm not trying to rhyme. And it was bugging the ever-living crap out of me. Went to an ophthalmologist a few times, and nothing really seemed to work. And then I was talking to my mom on the phone, and she said, "We'll just go to the crossroad." And I'm like, "Well, why?" And she said, "Well, that's how you get rid of it." I'm like, "What do you mean that's how you get rid of it? What are you talking about?" And she said, when one of my uncles had a really bad sty pop up, and one of the old wise women told my grandmother to take him to the crossroads, and when someone was coming by in a car, utter the phrase, "Sty, sty, that's in my eye, go to someone passing by." And the next day, the sty was gone. Now, whether this was pure superstition, it was coincidence, I don't know. But it's not the first occurrence of crossroad magic that I have heard of. But after that conversation, I was kind of grilling my mom of, what other weirdness do you know about? Because I didn't know, I've never heard of you talk about this before. And that's where she came up. Well, there was this one old wise woman, and she began to recant the entire kind of litany of Bible whispers. And it's something that I've been dying to do more research into, but just have yet to have the chance to.
Yeah, that would be something fascinating to look into. Clearly, there have been results.
Oh, absolutely. Clearly. Like, and dramatic results, too. It's not just, you know, oh, you had one little boil and it just happened to go away. It was suddenly your body is covered in them, and the next day, suddenly they're not.
Right. And when I think of the crossroads magic, I always come back to Robert Leroy Johnson, who supposedly went down to the crossroads and made a deal with the devil. And overnight, the dude, you know, it's crazy, is that the dude sucked. Like, he was bad at playing music. And then he makes that deal, and then overnight,
Golden fingers. Yeah.
Yep. Can do it all. So there's something to it, man. There is something to that crossroad magic. Because there are a couple of times, one of my cousins, born in New York, but she moved to Atlanta and lived in the South most of her life. And whenever she's upset, she likes to say, "All right, let them fuck with me. Go ahead, piss me off to the point where I go to the crossroads. And then you'll see what happens to you." So it makes you wonder. And I have to ask, in general, now I'm just throwing it out there, and for the listeners too, if you have further information on this, when people go to the crossroads, who are they asking to help them?
That's the thing. It's never a good thing.
Right.
It's always to make a deal, or it's to seek vengeance. Those are typically the two most well-known use cases of crossroads magic that's being that has been passed down.
Right, because the whole thing with your sty, it's not like it just only got rid of it. It technically, according to what you were told to say, you gave it to someone else, which kind of sucks.
Exactly. And that's why when my mom told me that, I'm like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to inflict someone else with this shit because this hurts.
But JJ, I wanted to pivot to nightmares. And I know we've been a little over an hour. I'm sure you have a bunch of more haunting stories from your family's tapestry, as you dub it.
So instead of going into that, because that does, I think that is going to take a while to get through, maybe we could do a follow-up on that one.
Yeah.
Oh, I do have one more story to tell. Now, actually two more, if you're good for it.
Oh, absolutely.
The first one is a story from my great aunt's house, which was the mirror twin to the log cabin that we had and was right across the cow pasture from us. There is a legend that the man who owned that property before my great aunt and uncle did was one of the worst kinds of misers that you could ever meet. Penny pincher from hell. And in fact, he didn't trust banks. And so he would bury all of his money in coffee cans into the ground.
So he was the heat miser.
Essentially, yeah. And they say that his spirit still roams that yard. And if you ever bother trying to locate that money and dig it up, that he would wreak utter vengeance upon you. And I've never seen any evidence to this fact, but when we were sitting out on the back porch during the summer night or something, they would always try to scare us kids by going, "Oh my God, oh man, something." I even forget what his name was. That is out there looking for you, trying to get you. So.
That'd be an interesting theory to put to the test.
It would be, but now that land has been parceled off and sold ever since they all passed away. So, yeah. And now I think my great aunt is probably turning in her grave, because the people that bought it since have absolutely ruined the place. And yeah, it's just a sad turn of events, unfortunately.
And on to what we'd say the final story of the night.
Sure. So this is the last kind of paranormal experience that I had direct encounters with. It was probably two nights before Halloween. And I could have maybe 10 or so. And I was good friends with our front door neighbors, the neighbors that lived directly across the road from us. And in fact, we would often stand across the bank from each other and yell out and have full conversations. And that family had an older sister. Because he was 1 year younger than I was, and I think she was 2 years older than I was. And then they had also three foster children that they also looked after. And because it was Halloween, we wanted to go play Fright Night, which is a game that I invented, which was essentially hide and go seek, but it was ghost themed. So I took all of these white towels and I rubber banded around my arms, my legs, and my chest and my head, trying to be like a ghost. And then I was it. And then I was chasing all of the kids around the yard as they hid. And it was just stupid fun. But, you know, we enjoyed it. It was a way to pass the time. Well, on this one particular night, this is probably the second or third night that we have been playing this particular game. I couldn't find, it had just gotten to full darkness. and I couldn't find anybody. I kept looking, and I was probably outside for a good 10 minutes until I went around the back of the house, and the ground sloped down, and that's where you can get into the basement that they had. And I was standing at the entrance to the basement looking around when, remember I was talking about the Colons before?
Yeah.
I was looking back at the road that led to the Colons, and probably 50 foot down that dirt little track, I saw a slender, solid white figure, almost glowing. And in my brain, I instantly thought, oh, that must be Lori Kay. It has to be the older girl that's out there. So I didn't know of anyone else that had that body shape. And I'm like, that's weird. But as I kept looking at it, and it was just kind of gliding across the road there, my hair was standing on end. And I got really freaked out. And I ran to open the door to the basement, burst in, and the entire family was sitting in the basement laughing at me. Because I'd been outside at this point for 10 to 15 minutes looking for them all, but they had come inside because it was so dark they couldn't see anything. And I kept like, what? And then who's? And then it struck me. There's no way. I mean, yeah, Lori Kay may have been pale, but there's no way that she would be glowing in the moonlight. And that's when I realized I had to have seen something that I absolutely still cannot explain.
I have to ask you, what do you think it was?
It had to be a spirit. It had to be, because that is the entranceway to the Colons, which has a history of taking people's health and people's lives. And in fact, they have that entire area gated off to prevent hunters from trying to go back in there, because it is highly dangerous. And they own that land. If they get injured back there, then they could be at fault. So they have signs everywhere warning people to stay away. It's a very treacherous part of the woods. So no one would be out there without their permission. So that's the only thing that I can think of. And the fact that my mind instantly went to, oh, that's got to be Lori Kay. When in fact, it absolutely could not have been, because she was sitting in the basement laughing at me.
JJ, I got goosebumps listening to that. But my mind is just racing with what could possibly be around there on that land.
I wish I knew. I really do.
Now it makes me think, you know, your great grandmother that dealt with had the chain thing?
Oh, my grandmother.
Your grandmother had the choking thing with the chain. And then you had another great great grandmother dealing with something else, something similar, being choked. And that's all in the same general vicinity, correct?
Yeah, the same area.
Yeah. So it makes you wonder, like, maybe it's not the devil. Maybe it's not a spirit. Maybe it's some sort of ancient entity that was there during the time of the natives. That
it could be, because this is, you know, when I tell you that you can point to anyone's property and there will be at least one ghost story associated with it.
Right.
You can do the same thing to almost any road. Oh, this is the road in which a slave boy is said to haunt. This is a plantation that, you know, is said to be filled with the vengeful ghosts of former slaves. You get two types. You either get the Civil War colonial, you know, slaves are going to come get you stories, or you get these are entities that's going to absolutely murder you.
Right. Yeah, because if you think about, I'm just, my mind is just going back to the whole chain thing, because that's absolutely terrifying to me. like maybe it was a disgruntled spirit of a slave that saw like some that literally saw a white woman in the fields in a place where they probably were and were just vengeful because of what happened to them. Maybe they lost their life prematurely due to circumstances of being in bondage. And it's like, you know what? I'm just really angry. And you look like someone that caused this harm to me. So I'm going to do this to you. You know, the possibilities are endless when it comes to those things. Now, personally, for me, thinking about it, I lean more towards a mixture of there are spirits there that are potentially angry because of the history of the land, you know, with colonialism, slavery, the conflicts between colonists and Native Americans and all that stuff. And also, you know, like you said, the railroad coming through. It doesn't have to be violent. It could always be that the railroad came through and disrupted something that was probably held sacred to former tribes that inhabited the region, and they probably paid homage to this type of deity or spirit. You know, that it's crazy because you look at the Americas, like the United States and the history of it, and all of these haunted locations and all of these stories and all of these places have such a deep, rich, horrifying history. If you look really like deep into it, all this trauma and everything. So everything that you shared with us tonight, I'm really appreciative of. Hopefully for the listeners, you guys got a little scare out of this like I did, and your mind keeps running like it like mine is right now, trying to figure out what this could potentially be, because some of it is unexplainable. And I, you know, sometimes it's probably is just easy to say that it was the devil, because it sounds like this is something the devil would do.
I will leave you with a final remembrance of my grandmother, if you don't mind. This is just the type of woman that she was. You know, please. She was deeply embedded within our family. She was our family matriarch. She controlled everything with a still but loving hand. She was the person that when churches had no money to pay for someone to take care of graveyards, and we had a family member buried there, we would go off and do that with my great aunt and great aunts and uncle. In fact, I spent, I would say, almost every single weekend in a graveyard maintaining it. So I grew up with them. But she had, well, she was diagnosed with cancer. And this was close to the end of her life. And we had a preacher who operated the church not 2 miles away from where our house is. And in fact, it's the church that controls the graveyard in which all of my family's, most of my family is buried in. And he came out to see my grandmother, and he told her, Miss Pokey. And yes, Pokey was her actual name. Her dad got it out from a children's book about a donkey, believe it or not. And no, it's not about Gumby's pal, but anyway. Said, Miss Pokey, don't you want to get right with God before you go to meet him? And she looked at him dead in the eye, and she said, I can find God faster in a tobacco field than I will ever find him in your church.
Wow.
And made him leave.
According to your story earlier, she did.
She absolutely she did.
JJ, once again, thank you very much for coming on tonight.
Thank you for having me. It was chilling to recant a lot of these stories, but it's also very therapeutic to me, and it also just kind of allows me to bask in the glory of ghost telling, which I have always loved.
Well, I could say you do one hell of a job of telling a story, because I had goosebumps every time you told a story. So I hope the listeners did as well. So why don't you tell our listeners where they could find you?
Sure. So Southern Demonology Podcast is available on all podcasting platforms. We've been around since 2017. Our website is at southerndemonology.com. There you find, not only can you play all episodes there, but also have all of the links to our various social media platforms. You can find us on TikTok, Facebook, Threads, etc. And we also have an active Discord community, which is a lot of fun. So come by, enjoy. We will welcome you, and hope you enjoy.
Go check out his podcast if you want to be on his show. He does have contact information. I was on his show before. It was a great time. And again, JJ, thank you so much for being on tonight. I really enjoyed those chilling stories. I hope our listeners enjoyed all of those stories, and I hope to have you back on to talk specifically about nightmares. Thank you for tuning into today's episode of The Wandering Road. If you enjoyed today's episode, please give us a rating on Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And please share the show with your friends, as that would help us grow immensely. Also, be sure to follow us on social media. You can find us on TikTok at TWR Podcast, our Instagram at TW Road Podcast, and our Facebook by searching for The Wandering Road Podcast. If you'd like to get a hold of us, you can reach us at our email address, twroadpodcast@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. We would love to have you on the show as a guest so you can share your stories, or you could submit email submissions of your stories that we could dedicate an episode to. Thanks, and we'll catch you on the next one.